What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have husband, father, the head coach of East Side High Basketball up in Lancaster. Lancaster, not Palmdale.
Yeah, Lancaster,
Lancaster, California. I don't want to mess that up. I make sure I'm saying that right. And the director of the High Desert All-In Elite Program and also a coach for those programs, Mr. Ash McCullough.
What's up, Ty? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm
appreciate
blessed.
You. Appreciate you.
Oh, man. Thanks for coming all the way down, man. The traffic said 2 hours, but he got here in an hour and a half. That's a dub for us. Man, we always appreciate people making that journey down to the studio.
Man, and I appreciate the invite. No, seriously.
Absolutely. Man, we connected a while ago via social media, other people. I don't even remember on Instagram and just been talking hoop and been a long time coming to sit in this chair ever since. So, man.
Yeah.
Excited to have you. We start this off with the Wall of Hoop movies. Favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
I went through a couple of them. I know I was thinking Glory Road, but I landed on Finding Forrester just because I really liked the story behind it. The player, you can see that he's learning to like navigate some things and kind of find himself. And for me, it was really personal because my grandfather, who actually brought me into the game of basketball, he put me on this movie and we watched it together all the time. So that's my favorite movie.
Man, I love it. Yeah, no, it's a movie I've only seen a couple times for sure, but the people don't understand the basketball roots, like just that piece of it and having somebody that is not connected to the game mentor you almost, right?
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So one of my favorites, I think it's a sleeper. And if you haven't seen it, especially kids, man, y'all need to come see all these hoop movies if you haven't. So
yeah, especially, I mean, nowadays you see like kids transferring and how they're navigating, learning to be around new teammates, new coaches, and just kind of seeing his story and adjusting from being from one side of town to the other side of town and kind of finding himself within that. And
yeah,
that was, it's a really strong story.
Yeah, absolutely. So when did you fall in love with basketball?
I fell in love with basketball when I was about 7 years old. I was playing at Park and Rec at Westchester Park. Those who know back then in the 90s, Westchester Park used to have two gyms. They had like a smaller gym on the other side of the park with like little kids playing in that one. So that's when I first fell in love with it because I remember scoring my first basket and my family members going crazy. And so I was like, you know what? This was actually kind of cool. That was actually kind of fun. So that's when I really fell in love with basketball and started taking it seriously.
Man, I always try to get to like when I was 7 years old, I was not thinking about any sport. And it's always dope to know something right away, right? When you... Mm-hmm. I probably played basketball with my family and all these things, but didn't really fall in love with it until I was older and could, like, I guess I was training and that's what made me like it. I was playing with my friends in 21. But having it that young, is there any way it's not a part of who you are now?
No, but it's actually funny because actually I fell in love with baseball first.
Okay.
And I was really good. I was like, I think I was way better in baseball than I was basketball. But as you get older, it starts to get boring. or the game is just slower. It's right. Slower. And then basketball is a little bit more fast paced. So that mixed with the family aspect, my family coming to support me. Yeah. Now it's like ingrained in who I am. There is no basketball. I can't even think about life without basketball at this point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, growing up, you said you were at Westchester Park, so you grew up in the L.A. area. You know, what are the most memorable parts of you growing up during that time and, you know, that moment of your family celebrating that bucket, but other big moments in basketball kind of through your childhood that really set the foundation for you being a coach now?
Just learning everything that I know about life now through basketball over time. I'm a super huge relationship guy. So all of my best friends, every single one that I've met, all the ones that were in my wedding, I met through basketball. And so kind of learning the importance of friendship and some of the life lessons that my head coaches was teaching me, hard work, dedication, showing up, I learned all through basketball. And so that kind of just cemented me when I was younger, and I started realizing how important it was. When I was about 10, 11 years old.
Yeah. I had a parent that wasn't a basketball parent, but it was a sports parent. We're having a discussion about their child and his commitment to the game at the time. He was actually a baseball player. And she had no interest in him playing baseball, understanding what it could do for his life at all. Mm-hmm. And so for those parents who may not have had that experience with sports growing up and, you know, work in a different field where they have success. So they're like, you don't have to go to the NBA to, you know, be successful and all those kinds of things. How are life lessons learned inside of a sport like basketball? Like you said, the hard work and commitment and all those things. Explain it to me as a parent who may be a doctor and like, hey, I've touched sports and I'm successful. How does basketball or sports teach you that?
I think sports mostly, so for me, growing up, I was never the most athletic kid. I wasn't the best player, but I learned to get advantages through working hard. And I was kind of lazy. My mom would always, she'd tell me I was lazy, but on that court, it was just different. And so when you find something you love and you really dedicate yourself to that, you can, those life lessons come through. And so for me, I learned you don't have to be the best at whatever it is, but if you can find different avenues to explore your passion through sports. So for me, like I said, mine was friendships. I love my friends, I love my family. And so I kind of leaned on working together and working as a team and learning those valuable lessons. At one point in my life, I've been in every single shoe. I always tell all my players, you guys think I don't know what you're going through right now? Like, I've been through every single thing. I've been the best player. I've been the role player. I've been second best player. I've been the bench player. I've been the person who doesn't get any playing time. I'm the person that coach kind of doesn't talk to. I've been all of it before, and I've learned how to navigate life through basketball.
No, absolutely. I think it's important that whatever that passion is, right, for a kid, that parents are able to use that to help them learn those life lessons and being on the same page. And something we kind of touched on earlier is just having that connectivity to families, right? When I'm meeting with this parent, it's our first time really meeting about her son. Her son was doing fine all year and just lately has been off, right? And what I found was is that we were all on a different page. We're like, hey, you're in our, you know, core, our middle school program is for serious student athletes, so you want to be here. And then for the mom, it's like, I don't even care if he plays this sport. I just want him to get good grades and be successful. Dad was all about baseball. It needs to be about baseball. And so we're all at different odds with what's best for the kid. And I'm like, well, we all need to back up. Does he want baseball? Or is this what we're going to use to help teach him to make him a leader and do those kinds of things? And so that's awesome, like to have, like you said, you've been in a lot of those shoes to fill. And so I know your players probably connect with you, or you know how to connect with them on the back end, right?
Yeah.
How has it been able to recognize where a player is and connect with their parents, though, on that side?
It's been tough at times. At times it's tough. Something that I'm trying more lately is actually having, like when we have exit meetings at the end of the season, instead of just doing the player, we're starting to explore actually doing them with the parents too.
Yep.
And bringing the parent in and having them sit down so that they understand what the expectations of the program are, what the expectations of me are, and I can communicate to them what I think, where I see them at. They can communicate with me where they see themselves at, and how can we work together to accomplish that goal. And that's been much more beneficial than just me talking to the player. Because sometimes parents will come and say, coach, you don't like my son. And I'm like, that's not true. I'm like, I actually love your son, but he does have to fix X, Y, and Z. So that's something that we're trying new within our program that I think is going to be much more beneficial moving forward.
Absolutely. No, I think being on the same page about, especially a kid, right? Like, I think it was different for us growing up. Like when we were in high school, we're kind of on our own. Like our parents were there, but they weren't involved like these parents are. Mm-hmm. And so having them included in those conversations about their expectations and what the basketball coach sees, you know, is super important.
Or even like you said, when we're growing up, like even if you had parents who were involved, you don't really see like that level of communication with the coach like you see now. Like I could always remember there's times, I remember one time I was like 12 years old and I'm sitting in the car and we had AAU tryouts, and this is kind of like when you started seeing teams branch off into like an upper team and a lower team. And I brought one of my friends in to try out and he got picked for the upper team and I didn't. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, and I just started bawling, crying. I'm pissed, I'm sad, I'm trying to figure it out. And till this day, I can't remember my grandfather ever talking to my coach.
Right.
Like ever, not one time. It was always, okay, play better, figure it out, or go talk to him. Now my mom, on the other hand, she's, he's like, no, let him figure it out.
Yeah.
He'll figure it out. And you know, I think that's another lesson, like, kids are resilient, man. Like if you give them an opportunity to figure it out, they will figure it out. But if you don't and you kind of hold their hand the whole time, you know, they never really get that opportunity to learn that lesson.
Yeah. How tough is that for you as a parent?
For me, it's easy. I mean, if you go to our AAU games, I let my son just go play. I don't even say a word. I think there was one time we were playing at 8 a.m. and he just wasn't playing hard. And I kind of like got on him in the car and I'm like, why are you not playing hard? And I kind of got in on him a little bit. But for the most part, for me, it's easy. I want other people to coach him.
Yeah.
I don't want to coach him. I don't want, if I do coach him, he'll be in high school.
Right.
And so I don't want to coach him by my wife on the other hand. Sometimes I'm like, who is this lady sitting next to me? I'm not even with her. She played, I think the highest level she played high school. I know for sure she played JV because she always tells me the story about how she was on varsity, didn't like it, started playing JV because she was getting more playing time. So those stories we hear the most, but yeah, she's been around. Her little brother played too. My brother-in-law, he played all growing up. So she's been around the game forever.
No, it's always, it's always important. I don't even think it matters, the experience of what level a parent plays. Sometimes it does, right, in navigating this and understanding that. But I've seen NBA dads or WNBA moms be doing too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're good because you just got to hoop. Like, what are, but also understanding that their insight and input can be game changing because they've had the highest level of experience. And I think it's definitely different for every kid. You know, coming up is like, where are they in their development? Do you need to push right now? Should you be coaching his dad? Should you take a back seat and let somebody else coach them? And all those things are, I think it's important to have a trusted circle around you to kind of give you that insight as a parent. And as a coach, to understand who's influencing them around them. So
it's especially for my son at his age, you know, 8, 9 years old. It's just the most formative part. And I struggle. I was coaching him at one point, but I struggled with should I push him? Do I work him out every day? Do I do this or do I do that? And I just go, why don't we just let him fall in love with the game? Just let him fall in love with it. And it's, I think for me, it's been better with my relationship with him, because now he gets mad at me when I don't take him to practice.
There we go.
We got varsity practice and he's like, where are you going? Why am I not going? You know, so my wife tells me, like, you know, you can't go anywhere now without him wanting to go. So it was a struggle in the beginning, but I think that's definitely the way we should be going as coaches and parents. Just let them fall in love with the game first.
Yes, man, that's the biggest part. I constantly argue with one of my best friends about this process, and you know, he has young kids and he kind of sees what I do with my daughter, like, just go have fun and be athletic. That's what I want. Just be athletic, be fun, get in shape type stuff. My daughter's only 6 and his kids are, I think, 9, 7, 5, something like that. They are in sports almost every day. There's something. I'm like, man, don't burn them out. Like, that's my argument. Like, don't burn them out, man. Let them have fun. Let them fall in love with this. And you can make a good college player when a kid turns 11 or 12 and you start developing them then, even later sometimes, really. But as long as they're athletic of some sort, you could teach them the rest of it. And so that falling in love with it and having fun as a kid with it. And his argument was, I pay for this. You can't afford to have fun. I'm paying for this. And I'm like, well, put them in the lower league. But they're too good to play in the lower league.
Yeah.
Well, now we gotta figure out that balance. Cause I understand what you're saying. You're investing in something. And so with that investment comes a certain level of seriousness and, you know, you gotta do it. You know, what would you say to a parent? Cause you look like you're in a great spot where your kid's asking you to go do the sport now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what would you say to a parent who kind of feels like, hey, they gotta go get it even though they're young?
I would say patience. You gotta be patient. I mean, I played college basketball and I didn't get any high level training at all. It was just whatever my coaches gave me in practice, and I played college basketball. It's funny, it's crazy to say that. It's crazy to hear that now.
Right.
But I didn't get any high level training. And so if the passion is there and they love it and they work hard, you gotta be patient. Things will fall in line when they're supposed to.
Man, awesome, man. You talk about playing college basketball. So let's hear your journey. We'll do a 2-minute drill of your basketball journey. Let's say starting from Westchester Park.
Okay.
All the way until, you know, the last day you laced them up in an official capacity.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 7 years old, Park and Rec, Westchester Park. Did that probably until I was about 10 or 11. Fifth grade, I started playing with a local AAU team in LA. It's called LA Ballers. And that's when the love really started to pick up even more. We got like the yellow Kobe's, those around the time the Kobe's came out. We got those yellow Kobe's and I'm like, wait, we can get free stuff for playing basketball? So I'm like, that really started to make it fun then. So that was about fifth grade. Then I went to a small charter school called Community Harvest Charter School. It was in LA. Did that from all of middle school through high school. So it was a six through 12, and we had about 300 students on the entire campus.
Okay.
And so I went from seventh grade all the way through 12th grade. Played varsity my junior and senior year. I would kind of follow them. I think maybe that's why my wife and I get along sometimes, because my 10th grade year, I actually made the varsity team. Ninth grade, I made the varsity team. Then I had bad grades, so I got taken off the team. 10th grade year, I made varsity, wasn't getting the playing time that I wanted to, so then I went down and played JV for the last, like, six games of the season. Then my junior and senior year, played varsity basketball. I was back when the small school section they had back then in LA City, so, like, we were in, like, the SOSIS, Harbor Teacher Prep, that kind of division. So I was an all-city player. All-league, all-city player for small schools. And then I went to West LA my freshman year, and I kind of got a dose of reality of what real LA hoop basketball is like. So I'm leaving high school thinking, I'm like, yeah, I'm all-city. It's not a big deal. Like, I can go play college basketball. It's not nothing crazy. First day at West LA, I was playing against some guys who bounced back from a Division I, and I was like, I'll tell my grandpa, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be here at this level very long. But I found a way to get on the roster. I redshirted Coach Ernie Carr, who's over at Gardena right now. He was my head coach. Chris Tabalos, he was our assistant coach. And then Julio, who spent some time with the Lakers, and I think he's at Bethesda right now, Bethesda University. He was also our assistant coach. Some things happened at West LA, you know, coaching changes happen. I don't think it was our coach's fault because we had just went to the playoffs. And then I went to East LA for about a year and a half and then laced up my last game. I was about 20 years old.
Okay.
20 years old.
And what made you know that was the end?
I was at East LA, I was get on the bus 2 hours every single day just to go to school.
Dang.
2 hours there, 2 hours back. And so just the grind of taking the bus every single day and going to school, going to class, like, while I knew it was important and it kind of was like who I am now in terms of how I approach everything, I just got tired of it.
Yeah.
I got tired of it, and then I realized, like, you know what, I could probably go to a 4-year, maybe, but I'm probably not gonna play. And I just was like, you know what, I'm just gonna not play basketball no more. And then I knew the game would come back to me at some point, But I just was like, ah, I'm not playing no more. It's over.
Yeah.
It's like, I think one day I was leaving. I put all my stuff in the locker room. And I walked out and I just go, I don't miss it. I don't miss it as much as I thought I was going to. And that's when I kind of knew that my playing days were over.
Yeah. Man. Crazy. Yeah. Well, you did it on your own terms.
Yeah.
And you knew. You gave it a fair shot. I think it's always important for kids who love the game to go explore college. And like you said, like you kind of, you went to West LA and kind of like, oh, this is real. You said some D1 bounce backs. Like junior college ain't for no, you know, oh, I'm at the end of the bench. And so, no, you got to be able to hoop.
Every kid that I've coached, they always be like, junior college, I'm like, go watch a junior college basketball game.
Right.
I was at, when I was at East LA, Coach Cav, I always remember this. Coach Cav was at Mount Sac, and that team walked in, and I think we played against Cayman Pruitt and some other guys, and I'm like, yeah, it's going to be over soon. Because I just wasn't physically I wasn't where I should have been for that level. And so a lot of kids, they think it's easy, and it's not sweet. It's actually harder.
Right.
It's really harder because you got people fighting for their, like you said, D1 bounce backs, they're fighting for their last opportunity.
Yeah.
And so it's just really, really hard.
It's the melting pot of basketball. You got the D1 bounce backs, you got D2 bounce backs, you got seniors, graduating seniors, you got kids who are in prep school who didn't make it after a year of just hooping. Like, everybody's in junior college competing for these spots. And I don't know if you know the research of how many kids in junior college make it to a four-year university. Mm-hmm. I know it varies by school for sure, but like overall, there's so many junior colleges out here at different levels.
Yeah.
Especially in California, where you in the talent capital of basketball. So everybody's going to these junior colleges along with the bounce backs and out-of-state kids. And just that competitive piece. And the grind of, like you said, out here in California, don't really have dorms.
Mm-hmm.
You're traveling to your school, and you got to really love it, and you got to really commit to that process. So,
yeah. So, and that's like you said, the melting pot. I mean, there's a reason why California is on a separate association by itself from the rest of the country. There's so many junior colleges, so many, and then like. You take kids to see games, or even like I go watch local AVC, and I'm just like, it's crazy. It's crazy like how good the basketball is at that level.
Yep. There's some good coaches in the junior college world, and it's a lot going on. So I like to highlight that part of your experience, like just being in junior college and that grind, and you know, understanding, hey, that was the top. That was where I finished too. Mm-hmm. I finished junior college, was my last hoorah in playing, you know, official basketball anyway. And so now you keep bringing up your grandpa, though.
Yes.
It sounds like he's a central figure in your life. You know, talk about him a little.
So my grandfather kind of took over the role of raising me. My dad wasn't around. My mom had me really young, so... My mom, my grandma, and my grandfather, they were basically raising me and my mom at the same time.
Wow.
And so my grandfather took over raising me. He spent all of his, like after he retired from NBC in the early 90s. He was working in marketing, and he spent all his time with me, taking me to practices, taking me to games. He actually helped me get into junior college, because after I graduated high school, I had no idea what I was doing after that. No offers, no anything. And so he just, you know, I think the love of the game also come from spending time with him all the time. And so he was definitely a main piece in my life. My uncle, his son, is like a father figure also. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And so those central figures in your life, right, like where something may happen, like you said, your father wasn't involved, and so, but God sent some people in your life to help guide you and put some structure around you. Did you deal with any trauma and because you said that's how you stay connected to basketball mm-hmm. because of your grandpa, right? Yeah. And that helped pull you through some mm-hmm. of that as well. Like, so, you know, to speak about that, maybe that trauma that was maybe you didn't feel it as much because of the connection that you had, you know, with those other people who stepped up and were a big part of your life.
Definitely there was some trauma there. I didn't realize until I got older how much I didn't really deal with those feelings of my father not being around. And so that's probably also a reason why I lean so much in the family into relationships. Mm. And so I feel very, very blessed that he was around, that he even stepped up, because he doesn't have to.
Right.
Like, he didn't just, like, he was done raised, well, not done raising his kids, because my mom was only 16, but he was on the tail end of it. She's the last one, she's the baby. And so it just kind of speaks to the man that he was, and he just kind of gave it all to his family. And so as I'm raising my own family, I have those same memories of, I got to find the balance, I got to find this, I got to find that, in order to pour into my son like he poured into me, so he doesn't have those feelings growing up.
No, absolutely, man. And that's important. That's exactly what I wanted to highlight, is that legacy that you can bring mm-hmm. by stepping up like your grandpa did, like us as men. I know there's many kids who need us, right? That we're placed in their life for a purpose and a need that's much bigger than just the game, right? Them winning games or getting to colleges for being these foundational fixtures in their childhood to look on for guidance and to look on for our characteristics. And so, you know, as a coach now, do you see yourself filling that role kind of as your grandpa did with the players that you have?
100%. I think I'm at a school, so one of the tougher side of town is Eastside High School. So it's on the east side of town. It's one of the tougher sides, and there's like stories every day that I could tell that I'm like, this is where I'm supposed to be at. I'm supposed to be here. We had a kid, like last year was one of my hardest years coaching ever. So not only did we start 3-14, I had a kid tear his ACL. He was a freshman starting on varsity, tore his ACL. He was averaging like 25 points a game for us as a freshman. Tore his ACL 5 games into the season. Shortly before that, I had a kid get shot, and he was a senior. Season was over, just like that. And just a whole list of other things where I go, after I take myself outside of the basketball part of it, as coaches, we all get wrapped up in the winning, the losing. You look at it and I go, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be at. This is exactly where I'm supposed to be, just because there's so many kids in our area that need positive male and positive black coaches. We don't have it very in Lancaster like that. So I definitely use the love that my grandfather gave me to pour into my athletes, and they don't like it all the time, because my grandfather did, like I say, he had to play better, figure it out, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I kind of have some of that to me. But I do definitely try to think about being more intentional into where kids are at now, but balancing that with the tough love.
Absolutely. Man, awesome, man. And good job, man.
Like, I appreciate
it. If anybody else say, man, thank you for being that in your community and where you're at. You're not even from there. Like, going up there and being that fixture up there, man. I know it means a lot to them kids and just to this basketball community or the community in general. So
that's all for you
for that, for sure. When did you know that you wanted to be a coach? So you stopped hooping. What did you get into in between not hooping and becoming a coach?
So before I became a coach, I was rec league, adult league all-star, fresh out of...
Man, I'm still adult league all-star.
Fresh out of junior college, going to play against, you know, the guys at rec league, and I'm like, yeah, I'm way better than y'all. So, like, I just was kind of having my fun doing that. But my coaching, it's actually funny, my coaching actually started when I was in high school. So I was in homeroom. And my homeroom teacher, I don't know if kids even still have homeroom. I know we don't have homeroom at our high school, but we're in homeroom, and my homeroom teacher told me, you're going to go into coaching, but you're going to start coaching girls. And I was like 18, and I'm like, okay, I'm not coaching girls basketball. Like, I had no interest. For whatever reason, I had no interest in it. He's like, no, you got the patience for it. You're going to do it. Wow. I'm going to see you as a girls coach. And I go, okay. I still walked out that classroom like, this guy is crazy. I love Mr. Pointer, but he's crazy. So between 21 and 24 years old, I kind of was just figuring it out, trying to see what I'm doing. I wasn't in school anymore after I stopped playing basketball, so I was just kind of figuring it out. I met my wife. She talked me into moving into Lancaster because she grew up in Lancaster. And I was just, as an LA kid, I was just like, I'm not moving out of LA. I'm not doing it. But I eventually did. And so I got a job. I got a job in probation. I was working as a juvenile correctional officer in probation. And I was, we had just got married and we had just found out we were pregnant with our oldest. Like, we found out literally a week after I got married. So like, we got married in July, 2 weeks, like a week and a half later, we went on our honeymoon. And then like a couple of days we got back from our honeymoon, she just was like, something doesn't feel right. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then she took a pregnancy test and found out so now I'm like stressing, like I gotta figure out what to do to take care of my family. And I had been going through the probation process for about a year and a half, hadn't heard anything. And then about a week after that, I got the call to go to the academy. Oh, nice. And so that was in like August. So now we get to the coaching part where in October of that year, where me and my wife ride out ultrasound. And this is a crazy story. I haven't told nobody this story very often. I just don't think people would believe me. We're at an ultrasound and I'm talking to my mom about my new job. My mom came up for the ultrasound. I'm talking to her about it. And this lady keeps jumping into our conversation. And she's like, she's an older white woman. She's just like, oh, I have a son who works in probation. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Yes, I'm cool. And she's like, and then she just like, yeah, my husband worked probation. She did it again. So in my mind, I'm like, who is this lady that just keeps jumping into our conversation?
And she's the lady who's doing the...
No, it's we're just sitting in the lobby.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, we're sitting in the lobby. I mean, I'm just talking to my mom while they're getting my wife taken care of before we went back there. And she's like, yeah, I just had a son. She said, I had a son who just came back from up north who's teaching. And I had my other son working probation. And so I eventually engaged in conversation with her. I was like, oh, okay. And so we started talking about probation. Shortly after that, I started coaching the YMCA. I just didn't like it because I didn't like the five in, five out subs, one practice a week for 45 minutes. Didn't like it.
Right.
So my wife was like, why don't you get into high school? I'm like, all right, I'll try it. Emailed every single coach in the Lancaster Palmdale area. Every single high school coach. One person responded. So he calls me at 6:30 in the morning. I'm just getting off work. I was working the night shift in juvenile corrections from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. So he calls me at 6:30. He's like, hey, I got this job. I'm looking for a coach. You want to come out? And I'm like, yeah, I'll come out. I'll come check it out, see what's going on. So I went immediately, like 3:30, right on the dot. I was there waiting for him. And he didn't tell me what level. He just told me he had an opportunity to coach. It was girls basketball.
Mr. Pointer.
Yes, and so I'm thinking, I'm like, okay. I'm pretty sure he didn't want to tell me it was girls basketball because a lot of people, for whatever reason, don't like starting off in girls basketball. So eventually I took the job. Full calendar year, so we went through season one. We come back around to season two. We're playing at Brentwood's tournament, and I run into Mr. Pointer. And as soon as I see him, he goes, I told you. Didn't I tell you? And I hadn't seen him since I graduated when I was 18. So now I'm like 26 years old. During that season, my head coach, he goes, hey, man, I'm going to go get my mom from the parking lot, watch the girls. I'll be right back. I'm like, all right, cool. I got you. He walks in.
It's the lady.
It's the same lady from the lobby. And I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. And so I sat on that story for 2 years before I told anybody. I didn't tell my head coach, my wife. I didn't tell, like, nobody's going to believe that happened. And
he was the correctional officer?
The other son was the correctional officer, which was his brother. And I was just like, there's no way. There's no way. But
did she recognize you?
No, she did not. She didn't even remember me. And I'm like, Eventually, after me and him talked about it, he said, and I told him, he's like, after I told him the story a couple years after that, and she was like, oh yeah, I do vaguely remember that. Cause she started, I mean, I saw her the other day, she's still pretty sharp in her age. So, that was like 10 years ago. So I don't know if she remembers now, but.
Wow.
So that was at, I was at Lancaster High School from 2015 to about 2018. My head coach decided to go coach boys at Highland High School, which is in Palmdale. I went with him as an assistant. I should have stayed because our girls team won state championship the next year. So I'm like, that always kicks me. And I'm like, dang, we should have, because the girls wanted me to stay. Because most of those girls that was on that team were, I started with them when they were JV in ninth grade. So they wanted me to stay, but I'm like, this is an opportunity to coach boys. Like, I gotta take that opportunity. And then while I was at Highland, the coach at Glendale College, coaching women's currently right now, he offered me a job. And I was like, right now is not a good time. The probation facility in Lancaster was currently closing down. I was transitioning to Sylmar in the Valley. And my wife was pregnant with our youngest. So I'm like, I can't go and commute every single, I was already commuting, but I couldn't be down there for 16 hours a day and away from her. So he was like, all right, you know, we'll talk again, whatever. Like, next year, he's like, hey man, I've been holding the spot for you. And wow. I was like, all right. So at the time, my head coach, he was also transitioning out of coaching, and the school had asked if I would stay on. And he's like, well, he's kind of wrestling between coaching, going to college and here, so I'm not going to tell him, because if I tell him this, he's going to stay at the high school.
Right.
And so I made the decision to go to Glendale. When I got to Glendale, that coach talked me into getting my master's degree.
Oh, nice.
And so I got my master's degree, and then next thing you know, I'm at Eastside High School. And the only way I was able to leave Eastside High School is because I got my master's degree. Now, I would have never got my master's degree if I wouldn't have went to Highland.
Or Highland.
Yeah, because then I followed him because he offered me the job from there. And then, but then you go back and you just look at the connecting layers of the story and how I got into where I'm at now. It's like, it still amazes me today. I sit back sometimes and I'm like, there's no way this is my life.
Yeah. That's amazing. You
know, yeah.
What did you get your master's in?
Coaching and exercise science from Concordia. Yeah. So it was easy. It was like easy. It was all stuff we already know. It's just now putting it on paper. And so the idea in that program is all the ideas and thoughts that you have as a coach, you get it on paper. And it was actually really instrumental for me in identifying who I want to be as a coach and who I want to be as a man and who I want to be to my family, because it's a Christian-based teaching, because through Concordia. So, and I get all those paper, get all of it on paper. And so my final portfolio was 100 pages.
You got a book.
Yep. About who I am, how I want to handle my coaches, who I want to handle, how I want to be ethically, morally, everything. Like everything that you need to
be. You publish it?
No.
What are we waiting on?
I probably should.
Yeah.
We probably should.
It's easy now.
Yeah,
you already got it written down, and you probably can add to it.
Yeah.
And kind of be your biography of your coaching life, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so the idea is, and then the final idea with them is, you walk into any interview and you can just slide it in front of the administration and be like, this is who I am. You have any questions about anything I said in the interview, this is who I am. And I was able to do that when I interviewed for Eastside. Like, I kind of had an idea I was going to get the job, but I was just talking about everything that I planned on doing with the program. I came in prepared. I watched every single league game before I walked to the interview from the previous year. I was able to say players' names. I knew we had a team that was ready to win. And I'm like, this is what I'm going to do fundraising-wise. This is what I'm going to do with parents, X, Y, and Z. And then the final thing was, if you guys have any, I used the same exact thing that they said in the program. If you guys have any questions about who I am, here you go. It will match exactly what I said.
Mm.
And 2 hours later, I got the phone call. They were like, hey, we want to hire you. That's it. That's how I ended up at Eastside.
Man, I love the preparation. I love that master's program.
Yeah.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
It's fairly inexpensive, too. So it's a really good program.
Man, that's dope. And so how long have you been at Eastside now?
We just concluded our third year. So I've been here for 3 years, heading into my fourth season next year, teaching third year, and Hopefully, by the time this airs, I will get good news. I'm pretty sure it's going to work out, but they're promoting me into an academy coordinator position at the school, where if I do this, an education academy, and the idea is the students come through the program as ninth graders, and by the time they graduate, they'll have credits going towards an education degree, social work, counseling.
Nice. And so that's some dual enrollment courses for college.
And we're trying to get dual enrollment too. So, but it's an academy program, and then I'm looking to take on that position. I'm pretty sure it's going to work out. And if that happens, and
this is airing next week.
Okay. Well, I probably won't know by then, but I mean, to be honest with you, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's done. Like, everything is. We're just waiting for the district to find a job so that they can say it's mine. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's gonna be really good, and I'm looking forward to staying at Eastside for a while, and hopefully retiring my wife in about 12 months.
Man, ladies, did you hear that?
That's the goal. That's the goal.
That's awesome, man. Retiring your wife is the most fulfilling thing you can do as a provider, for sure. Nobody tells you. I retired my wife when we had my daughter, when she was six. Or she's six now, 6 years ago, sorry. Not when she was six, 6 years ago. And the biggest part, the other end of retiring her is making sure she got a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure she stayed with it. You know what I mean? Because just like anybody, you're doing something every day. And I think my wife is finding hers and figuring it out. But for a while, it was just like, you know, taking care of the kids. Yes, that is more than a job. Like, amazing. I'm so glad my wife was home. But also, hey, what's for you? Like, go back to getting something for you, too. And so, just you know, have her start thinking about that, because it changes, because you have kids, the kids are at school, and all these kinds of things, just on some real life stuff.
And I think she really has a love for doing weddings. Like, she likes to be a wedding coordinator, but she doesn't like to be in charge of it. She just likes to be the assistant that comes and helps out, gets to smile, take pictures with the bride, do stuff like that, and kind of help her. She really, really loves that stuff. So she has her hobby. It's just about, I gotta do a better job of like forcing her to do it more often and not worrying about us and the kids.
Yeah. We know that we can't force our wives to do anything. So we just stuck in mud. So,
So, but she, at this point in our life, like, she deserves it. Like I said, I was working for 7 years in probation graveyard shift so that I could coach during the day. And so I was literally coming home, sleeping at like 6:30 in the morning to about 10. Me and my oldest were kind of not sleeping together. Like, she would leave, go to work, and I was just with him all day long. Right. And then I would go coach from 3, and I was, like, super, super dedicated. I wanted to be a head coach, so I was at practice with the girls from 3 to 7:30. Right. And I was coming home for an hour and going right back to work at 10. And so we're at the point in our lives where, like, I think we're going to be able to make that happen soon. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations, man.
No, I appreciate it.
No, absolutely. That's dope. And then you've been with West Coast Elite, now All In Elite, for the last 5 years.
5 years.
5 years, man. What's your experience with it? How'd you get connected with Ryan Silver and that whole program? And you guys doing big things up in the high desert.
Yeah. So I got connected with them. When I was working at Glendale, coaching there. And I took the job in 2020. Literally right before the world shut down, like a week before COVID shut everything down, I had just accepted the position. We had just finished high school season. So I had nowhere to coach. We were like, we had no idea when basketball was coming back. And so they have an assistant coach there at the time, Malik Bray. He's now the head coach at Santa Monica College. And he's like, hey man, look, if you want to get into coaching, come coach with me at West Coast Elite. And I'm like, all right, cool. And so it was, the first year was kind of rough because we're only playing in like Arizona, Vegas, so we're literally traveling like every single weekend. So that's how I got connected with them. And so I was coaching like the lowest team, 17s with Malik. And then I just kind of hung around, and eventually now I'm like the middle. I'm not quite the shoe contract coach yet, but I'm right in between there. And I just, but for me, the opportunity that Ryan gave me to have my own branch was way more important than coaching at the highest level. Because our middle school programs in the Lancaster Palmdale area are struggling a little bit, at least in my area. And so the opportunity to coach those kids before they get to me was more important than coaching, you know, Mozzie or those guys that go to the big time schools, because it's like, I'm not really gaining, that's not really helping me.
Right.
Like, it's, I'm getting reps, but I'm not really learning how to develop the way I need to for my high school to be successful.
Yeah.
And so I went to my administration about a year ago, and I just told them, I said, hey, if you want me to be here long term, I want to be here long term, we got to get a middle school program. Like, we have to. We just don't have a choice, because the kids, there's no real consequence in middle school. Like, they all play basketball. And so they come to us and ninth graders, and there's consequence where if you don't go to school or class, you're ineligible.
Right.
And they don't learn that. They think it's a joke. And so I was like, I got to start programming them when they're in middle school so that we can be successful. Because if we don't, then I'm going to spend 2 years programming them. We're going to have years like we just had last year where I was 3-14 to start. And the program was suffering because we're spending time programming. And to my administration's credit, they saw the value in it, and they're like, yeah, let's, you can run it out of the high school and we'll support you in whatever you want to do.
How do you get that type of support from administration? What do you think you did, or you know, what does it take? Because you hear a lot of, about a lot of barriers, both in public and private, with the administration. How do you think you bridge that gap?
I think I'm blessed in the sense that my athletic director, he's still the current coach on campus, so he gets it. He understands the climate. He's been around the high school for about 20 years. And my vice principal that's in charge of athletics, both, she coached softball and was like a CIF champion in softball for like 15. She won the CIF championship, but she coached for like 15 years. So she gets it also. So having both that are in athletics, I think on my aspect, I just overly communicate with them about everything. I take time to build the relationship with them outside of sports. Like, don't just, I'm not just talking to them about basketball or the program. It's life. And that has been the most beneficial thing for me. And I think they see how much I care about the program by how much I prepare. And I think it started when I walked into that interview and I showed how prepared I was. They knew I was going to take it seriously. And so just building a relationship with them. I mean, like I said, being blessed to have admin that's worked in sports has been the most beneficial thing in terms of having the support I need to build the program where we're at.
Man, amazing. In and throughout your journey, especially through your, I'm going to say your professional coaching years, right? Mm-hmm. Building to where you are today, where you're the head coach of a program, a head, a director of, you know, an AAU program, you've had to sacrifice. Talk about what you have been willing to sacrifice and what you have not been, what you have not been willing to sacrifice during that time.
I think I'll start with what I have not. I think in the beginning, when I was younger and more selfish, I was willing to sacrifice whatever. It didn't really matter. And so there was nothing that I would not sacrifice. Now that I'm getting older and I'll be 35 in May, I'm starting to understand the importance of not sacrificing everything. And so the main things that I sacrifice is I don't really spend time. I talk to my friends, like when we're playing video games, or we're playing 2K or whatever, but if we have, like they have like big things going on, like a baby shower, birthday parties, I'll pull up. But I'm not really there for the weekend, week out hangouts. Yeah. I'm not really there for, I'm at the high school literally from probably 7:30 in the morning to like 8 o'clock at night most times. Just so I'm willing to sacrifice not playing video games, not doing whatever it is to get to where I wanted to be at. And so I think a lot of people think that you get to where you want by just showing up, and that's like not the case. Like you're gonna have to sacrifice something. And for me, all the extracurriculars, like no matter what it was, I was willing to sacrifice any of it. And then even family time. I mean, I spend time with my wife and my kids, but like I don't really go to family gatherings. If we have a basketball tournament, I ain't going. Like it's just that, it's really just that simple. And I think I learned that from my grandfather. He kind of nurtured that when I was younger. Like one of my biggest memories I remember, I was 13 years old. My mom was having my twin brothers. And they were like, we got to go to the hospital. She's about to have the babies. And I'm like, I got practice. They'll be there when I get right. done. Like, I'm not going to be able to go see them anyways.
What's next for you, right? You've really elevated every single year that you've kind of been in this game. And with your career, you know, you're talking about family and being able to retire your wife. You about to have more kids?
No, we're done. Okay. No more.
And so what's next for you?
I think what's next for me is learning to delegate more so that I can be around for my youngest. My oldest and my youngest. My youngest don't want nothing to do with sports, so he's just at home on the tablet all day long. But just so I can be there for my oldest as he is starting to get more serious about basketball. Some of the steps that I'm taking to learn how to balance that is our football coach who just got hired, Spencer Hagen, he just started a coach's Bible study.
Oh, nice.
On our campus. And so it's me, him, and a couple other coaches. And so we just get together. Actually, tomorrow, our next meeting, we just kind of read and talk about, it's the Bible study through coaching. And so I've been seeing more where I can kind of take a step back from being in charge of everything to kind of lean more back into now that I've made the sacrifices to be with my family.
Awesome.
And so that's where we're headed. That's where I'm headed next, is being more intentional about spending time with them now that I've kind of gotten to where I wanted to be at.
Yeah, God will honor that. That's something I've never been willing to sacrifice since I had kids.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped training in the afternoons. I stopped mm-hmm. coaching. I haven't been on the bench for high school since my daughter's been born, because I don't want to give up that time.
Yeah.
And God has honored it. You know, he's given us provision and seen us through, and times get tough. But overall, it's been a positive thing in my life, and people respect it. You know, I only train in the morning. Like, if you want to work with Todd, you know you got to wake up mm-hmm. 6 a.m., 5 a.m. I used to do 5 a.m., whatever. I'll wake up, train whenever, but I don't do afternoon sessions because I'm going to be with my kids. Until my son turns 5, I won't be on a high school bench until my son can, like, sit and practice with me.
Yeah.
That's where I need to be, where they both can sit and practice and, you know, not be a distraction, but be around me, because I think that time is valuable. So hats off to you, man, and doing it at the right time as your son's coming into his own. So,
man.
You're on that path.
It's not easy. It's not easy because there's times.
No, it's not.
There's times. Like, even last night, I went to our varsity was starting, like, they're starting to pick up their AAU stuff. And so my JV coach was taking over. And he's been coaching for a long time, so I know he knows what he's doing. And I trust him. But I was like, I told my wife I was going to be home at 8:15. And it's like 8:10. And I'm like, oh, my God. Luckily, I live 2 minutes from the high school. Like, I could literally hear the football games on Friday night from my house. Close I am. But I was just like, okay, I said I was going to be intentional about this. I need to leave now. No matter what happens afterwards. Yeah. And I had players reaching out to me like, Coach, can we get some work tomorrow? Or can we do this? How come you didn't stay? But it's just super, super, super important.
Yep, absolutely, man. That's going to carry you more through your career than anything, is keeping that connection with your family and being present.
Mm-hmm.
Just literally being there. Like, my kids just want me at home. Sometimes they don't even pay attention to me. They just want me at home.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, awesome journey. Yes. Thank you for sharing your story, at least pieces of it, man. Mm-hmm. Your ability to adapt and get to that next piece of wherever you want to get, man, has been amazing. So, man, thank you for sharing that.
Of course. I appreciate it.
Awesome, man. We're going to get to the next segment, My Rushmore. All right, man, you had like 3 favorite hoop movies.
Yep.
We're going to do the top 4 basketball players in a movie. Your top 4.
Okay.
All right, so who you got?
Number 1, obviously everybody knows the GOAT, Jesus Shuttlesworth. Like, I know it's controversial, but I think Jesus Shuttlesworth is the GOAT. I think Jesus Shuttlesworth is the GOAT. Jamal from Finding Forrester. I think he was just super smooth. And Cruz from Coach Carter. I don't know why. I just love
my hair's grown out. They say right. I look like him.
Cruz. And then I can't really think of who my – it'll probably – One of the it was either Woody or Wesley from
Above the Rim,
yeah.
Yeah, which one, man? Billy Hoyle?
No, Above the Rim, White Man Can't Jump.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, White Man Can't Jump. I think I'm gonna go with Billy.
Gotta go Billy.
Yeah, gotta go Billy, man.
Shoot that thing.
Yeah.
Man, so this is interesting because I'm gonna ask a question. To make sure they don't count. LeBron James in Space Jam 2 and Michael Jordan in Space Jam 1. Are we counting? We're not counting them.
No, we're not counting them, yeah.
Even though Jesus was a real player, but he didn't play himself.
Yeah.
And he was young. All right, yeah. Cool. I just wanted to make sure we got out of the way. Man, my number one, I'm going to have to... I think I'm going to have to go with... Is this our favorite or the ones who could actually hoop? You saying who could actually hoop.
Those could be your favorite, too.
I'm going Shep.
Okay.
From Above the Rim. Okay. Man dropped 40 points in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
In a game.
Yeah.
Christian Juzang pointed that out to his ladies on the show. So I'm going to go with Shep, man. That boy could hoop. And he hadn't played in like 20 years, and he still had it, man.
Yeah.
Like, he went out there and gave them dudes buckets.
No basketball clothes on. Just the
corduroys, long sleeve.
Yeah.
And number 52 was on his team twice somehow. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, man, I like Shep on the Above the Rim. All right, we'll go with Jesus Shuttlesworth. He was nice. You know, I mean, all we really saw was him giving his dad buckets.
Yeah.
But that's cool. We'll let it go because, you know, we know he could hoop. Man, I'm gonna go with Malik Wright in high school off of the What's his name? Is his name Malik? What was his name? Love and Basketball. Why am I tripping on his name? It's Monica Wright McCall. Quincy McCall. There he goes. Man, he could hoop, man. Yeah. He was SC to the pros, you know, until he busted his knee up. But man, he had smooth game for the 80s. Like he had that 80s style game. Yeah. I like this game, and I think we're going to have to go with Penny Hardaway's character in Blue Chips.
Such an underrated movie. People do not talk about Blue Chips.
Before its time. Mm-hmm. If it came out today, they'd be like, oh.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I think they should probably remake it. I think that'd be dope to remake it with the NIL and this space and kind of give people a landscape, a view of what the college landscape is now. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, let's do that. Let's remake Blue Chips. Yeah, don't put that on the show. I don't know if I take that idea. No, you don't have to really take it out. You're good. That's a solid four, man. Solid four. I think this is a good argument piece all the way down. A good barbershop talk for sure. A lot of good hoopers. We didn't even talk about, what's his name? The Ghost and Sixth Man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I've been looking for that movie on DVD for the longest.
It's not anywhere?
I couldn't find it anywhere. Maybe I'm just not looking.
I have the original though, like from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's interesting. I'm gonna hold on to it then.
underrated. That's a definitely underrated movie too. Absolutely. Like a lot of people don't talk about The Sixth Man like ever.
Funny movie, man. I love it. Funny movie. Our next segment is Fix the Net. So a misconception about yourself that you want to make straight.
Okay. A misconception about myself is I'm actually very approachable. A lot of people say when I'm in the gym, I'm not approachable at all. Or I'm scary. I get that on campus a lot when I'm walking on campus. The kids say I'm intimidating. I'm like...
You walk like Terminator or
I guess,
something?
I guess so. I guess I'm like... But I'm actually, especially outside of basketball, I'm very approachable. Like, I'm super... Like, you can just... I can talk about almost anything. Not anything, but like I just come off as unapproachable sometimes, but... I'm just very business. I think it's because I'm very business sense, and like I'm all like, if I'm out doing something, I know what I got to do. I don't just leave the house just to like hang out, or even on campus. Like if I'm leaving my classroom, it's to go to the gym. I got to wash uniforms, or like I'm very focused. So maybe I need to be a little bit better on looking not as focused when I'm just walking around. But misconception is I'm actually very approachable.
Yeah, Go ahead and fix the net, brother. There's a study out. There's a CEO who they were trying to figure out why sales were down in the company. And they had a consultant come in. And the guy asked, how often do you go out and see the people in your company? And he's like, you know, once a year, see them at the holiday party. And he challenged them just once a week to walk around and just smile at people.
Yeah.
Sales went up by like 40%. Just seeing the leader go out for no reason at all, just to say hello. So some encouragement for you.
Yeah,
just
definitely.
Go out there and say what's up. Without, not on, you know, not on the business side of stuff, just saying hello. And I think they made him give one compliment to a person in every department. Something like that, you know? So something simple like that.
Yeah. I'm gonna definitely implement that. I walk campus a lot, but
just walk campus to get things done. I'm like, you know, I walk really fast and with intention. And so you're in a fraternity as well, aren't
yes.
you? Yes, you're a noob. Okay, so I'm a Sigma. And so I think we learned that from our intake process that you got to move with a sense of urgency. And so that's where I got it from. And people always ask me, like, yo, why you walk so fast? I'm like, man, I just move with a sense of urgency. It's kind of ingrained in me at this point. So, yeah, where'd you pledge at?
Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, fall 24. So I just crossed.
Oh, you just crossed.
I just crossed alumni chapter, Valley Noobs.
Okay.
Yo. But
so,
yeah,
a lot going on. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, and it's crazy because, my grandfather crossed in 66. And so, my grandfather crossed in 66, and my uncle was actually the first crossing member of my alumni chapter.
Oh, okay.
And so it's kind of like a family thing. And we were just, at our Founders Day about a month ago or 2 months ago now, we were just kind of talking, and I started realizing how much of my family values was already started being passed down to me before I even crossed the fraternity. And it was just like, it's just a blessing to see everything being passed down. My godfather is a charter member in our alumni chapter. All of his friends that coached me.
Oh, you were bound to Drizzown. That's what that
so,
is.
They were, a lot of them were coaching me when I was in like baseball when I was like 9, 10 years old. And I didn't know what was going on. But then like I started looking and I'm like, so I've seen some of these guys before, and then it's the best organization in the world, man.
It's absolutely. Man, I got a lot of people
absolutely.
Who say different that I know.
It's absolutely.
Who knows? Absolutely, man. And it's, this is the part where we flip the script. Mm-hmm. Two questions for me could be about anything in the world.
With your son, I know I've heard you talk about how he's going to be a hooper. How do you plan on balancing training him or coaching him if you end up coaching versus being a dad?
I'm already his dad. And so what I learned is this is two things. One, I want him to fall in love with it first, right? So I'm gonna make it very, game oriented while he's young. And just keep him in the gym with me. Kind of like, that's what you, like he's just been, your son's just been in the gym. So he just does it. And when I'm a coach, I'm a coach. So, you know, on the court, you're gonna call me coach and I'm gonna treat you like a player. I've seen that, and I've seen successful father-son relationships happen on the court, you know, once it's that time. And when we're off the court, we ain't talking about basketball unless he brings it up, unless there is a real conversation. And, you know, I'm a really focused developer. And so I know it's going to take time, and just have patience with his development process and whatever that looks like. I think that's the biggest pieces that we get so anxious about where they could be and should be and what they should be doing. When I start playing till I was 11, he gonna start playing when he's 5. Like, you know, we gonna have different routes and ways to get to it. So, you know, and I have a lot of trusted people around me who I know if he doesn't want me to coach him, I can send him somewhere and he'll be all right. And so that's the backup plan. So,
And kind of like I mentioned earlier, where like I didn't get any professional training, like at all. And so like, they'll figure it out, you know? My wife early on, she was like, come on, like you should go train Carter, you should go do this, you should go do that. And I'm like, I'm like, I don't, he'll figure it out. He'll figure it out. Like, he's only, you know, he'll be nine. This is around the time I started getting serious. And like, I played college basketball with no training at all.
Right.
And so I really do, like, my JV coach coaches his 10U team now. Just because I'm like, I can't do it because I don't want to damage the relationship. But like you said, just having trusted people around him is going to be, I think, I know for me, it's going to be the biggest thing. Because I still watch. Like, I'm like, I watch the game and I'm like, come on, coach. Like, what are we doing? But I keep it to myself. You know, I don't really, well, not really with him, just like some other people who have coached him before, you know. But yeah.
Yeah. So. I'm definitely going to pick Chris Johnson's brain, right? Mm-hmm. Who's been a NBA trainer pretty much his son's whole life, right? And his son, like, he really took his time and developed him and let him become who he is. And their relationship seems great. You know, just his father, son, and they, but he's the one who's been working him out and training him for the most part. I think Corey, who's Chris's assistant, did a lot of the training, like, mm-hmm. through his high school years, like, on the court. But Chris has always been a part of it, you know? And so I'm going to kind of pick his brain to see at that high school stage what that looks like, because boy turned out really, really dang on good.
Yeah.
And you didn't see it at first. Like, well, if you didn't have a hooper's eye, like, you could see it just because of his movements, and he's been training with pros since he was 10, 11. And so he just has some innate things, but like the physical aspect of it, and it just came together his junior year. He did well. That spring and summer after, he broke out in his senior year, you know, a couple 40, mm-hmm. did he have a 50-point game too? Or 48? 40-something. Yeah, he was balling, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's where I am. You know, I didn't play in the NBA, but I'm around this. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and then I think the second question is, I know you've spoke on, like, being intentional with your kids and being at home with your kids. How do you maintain being intentional with your marriage and your wife, and how do you balance that?
Same way, just make sure I'm present. I think our main focus right now in life is our kids, because they're so young and active and doing so much. So me being home with the kids is paying attention to her, kind of relieving that burden of her having to, you know, be with the kids for a long period of time. And when the kids go to bed, we just have, that's our time, you know, from 8:30, whatever time the kids go to bed, till we go to bed, we make sure we're intentional and we spend time. And then even now, actually, during the day, like, there might be some little, like, 30-minute hour breaks between, you know, 8 a.m. and 12 p.m., and I might sneak home and we'll just be chilling on the couch talking. And we're getting back to date nights. Those kind of shut off for the last year and a half or so just because of life. And so we're getting back to date nights, being intentional about those things, and even talking on the phone to her. So she, for some reason, everybody thinks I'm, like, busy all the time because of my Instagram feed.
Yeah.
Like, no, people post, Bella posts for me. Like, thank you, Bella, I appreciate you. You make people think I'm busy. but, like, I'm not as busy as I look. And so even my wife was like, I don't want to call you because you look busy, or I don't want to bother you. And I'm like, if there's anybody who could call me anytime, you can. I literally told her this like a month ago. So now she just randomly calls me, and so we'll be on the phone for talking about whatever.
Yeah.
And so just finding intentional ways about just connecting like that. Doesn't have to be any, it's not big gestures. It's the little things that you do every day that build that account. You know, we kind of have a marriage account, like putting more positive things in there than negative things. Because you're going to mess up. Just make sure you have a lot more.
That is a fact.
Have a lot more positive deposits rather than withdrawals from that account.
Yeah.
And I think we really focus on that. It's always kind of been our thing. It's like, yo, this marriage comes before these kids. This marriage comes before our jobs. This marriage comes before everything, because this is what the kids see, and this is what kind of holds us up as a unit, as a family. So
I think. The last probably 6 months or so, especially since, you know, we were talking about the Bible study earlier, just like the importance of little things, like you said, just being on the phone. Like, I think I called my wife about 2.5 weeks ago, just randomly during my lunch break, because I was just like, hey, what are you doing? And she's like, what's going on? And I'm like,
scared.
No, I'm just like, what's going on? I'm like, I was just seeing what you were doing. I was thinking about you and then like seeing how excited she got. Yeah. But I was thinking, we were talking about that in Bible study about leaning into your relationship with your spouse. And I was like, dang, I was like, it's crazy. Like, it's not like crazy in a bad way, you know, but like crazy, just like how something simple. I think as coaches and people who are getting really busy, you think you got to have grand gestures all the time. And it's,
yeah,
and that's not the case at all.
Yeah.
Especially when you have someone like that really loves and cares about
that's
you.
That's your like, homie.
Yes. They just want to hang out and talk to you.
Yeah.
You know.
No, absolutely. There's an app too that I have, and it asks both of us a question.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see her answer unless I answer it, mm-hmm. and the opposite. I forget what it's called.
I think we actually tried that too.
It's called Couple or something like that. I'm about to look it up so y'all. Keep y'all marriages straight. Hold on. Paired.
Paired. Is it purple,
it's
right?
It's purple.
We actually tried that. I think we just stopped doing it.
Yeah,
one day
yeah. So we try to stay on it. Like we don't judge each other. Oh wow, it's a great question. Some hot topic questions today. Wow. But yeah, that's been cool because it's a place where you can like just quick answer, but it actually gave us insight. Like it actually asked, you know, like when you cuddle, do you like to be the big spoon or the little spoon?
Yeah.
And my wife didn't know, like sometimes I want to be the little spoon. Like I'm saying, she's like, you really want to be held sometimes?
Right?
Like, look, I said once a month, like don't take this too.
Don't get crazy.
No, don't get crazy. But like sometimes brother need to be held, you know what I'm saying? And so she's been having fun with it. You know, just trying to little spoon me all around the house. I'm like, no, that ain't it. Like, but it you know, it's cool just to have that fun and connect and having something intentional that you can go to that connects you. So,
yeah.
Absolutely, man. You got a 24-second shot clock. Let the people know where they can find you on social media and any message that you have for the people. That's your camera right there.
Coach Ash on Instagram, Coach_Ash_ on Instagram. On Twitter is Coach Ash_2. And the message that I have for the people, mainly just coaches, me and Todd have talked about it a couple times, but just being really intentional, especially if you have a good wife, really leaning into that. I would say I wouldn't have gotten to where I was in my coaching career without the support of her. And so really leaning into understanding the coach, like the how important the family dynamic is into being a good coach, because a lot of times you don't see that on the back end. And so it's very, very important. And I know I'm blessed. She will say the same thing, that I'm blessed to have her, but it goes both ways. And I love her. And coaches, just really lean into it, man. Lean into your spouses and then you'll get everything you want.
Man. My brother, man. Thank you for blessing the show, man. Yep. Hey, reach out to him, man. If y'all need some coaching advice and you guys are trying to climb that coaching ladder and just having preparedness. And then, man, if you need help with balancing that work-life balance, man, with family, man, we're always here for that. And so, man, we thank you. And I appreciate
you,
brother. Absolutely. That's all we have for you today, folks. Let me start that over. I said, that's all we have for you today, folks. We'll see you next time. Peace.